I was home in Baltimore in between my junior and senior year of college, came back to Baltimore from Richmond, had no prospects of a job. After a couple of weeks, my mother was looking at me thinking, what are you doing? You can't sit home all day long and sleep in and go out with your friends. And so I can't remember how I found about this job, but it was a evening hostess at a French restaurant at Hopkins Plaza Friday and Saturday night. So I went down to interview, and I got that job, but I got an extra job on top of it, which was to be Monday through Friday during the day, the chauffeur for the restaurant. The gentleman who owned the restaurant, I'll call him Jay, to protect his privacy, because he still lives in Baltimore. He had a Cadillac, and my job was to dress up, troll through the city streets of Baltimore in 1985, and lure businessmen into my car and bring them back to the restaurant for lunch. I was 20 years old, an introvert, a little shy, driving this big black car through the city streets of Baltimore. I would travel down to the Inner Harbor, around the convention center, park my car, get out, see prospective businessmen and ask them if they wanted to get in the car. I don't know why our Baltimore's finest never stopped me and asked me what the hell I was doing. So this went on for maybe a week or two. By the way, my mother didn't know about that job. I never told her until, really, she found out about it a couple of years ago and was appalled that her daughter had done this job in Baltimore. So, you know, one day after a couple of weeks of me doing this job, I walk into the restaurant, and it's maybe a Wednesday, and the daytime hostess of the restaurant had quit unexpectedly. So I got promoted. I didn't have to drive the Cadillac through the city streets of Baltimore anymore. I got to be the hostess during the day for the lunch crowd and then Friday and Saturday nights. So that's what I proceeded to do. I felt much more comfortable. Now I got to greet the gentlemen who were coming in for their lunches and just see them at their table and leave them there. So this went on for, again, a couple of weeks, and we're eking into the, you know, the towards August. And one week during the lunch crowd, there was, you know, back in the 80s, you wouldn't call them homeless, but there was a homeless gentleman that was lurking around Hopkins Plaza and was coming into the vestibule in the hostess center asking to eat, use the bathroom, to sit down. And Jay, the owner of the restaurant, was adamant that this person was to be kicked out every single time he walked in. So he'd walk in, he'd approach me, and I'd tell him he had to leave, and he had to leave, and he had to leave. So again, it's the 80s of Baltimore, and I'm segueing to another story, but if you remember, in the 80s, there wasn't a lot of direct deposit for banks, and so I would get paid every Friday. And what I would do is I would go to the bank of the restaurant, cash my check, and then deposit my check on Saturday at my bank, so I would get my money immediately versus waiting 5 days. Remember, it used to be 5 days for your check to clear. So it was a Friday, and the gentleman had come in and out all week long, and I kept on kicking him out. And again, I was staying there that Friday night to work the evening shift. And I was also the youngest of four. And so I never had the car growing up. My brother had it, my sister had it. And so, like any good Baltimore girl, I would take the bus back and forth to work. And I'd taken the bus since I was a little kid, had no fears about it. So that Friday night, I finish my shift. It's around 11:30, and I walk over to Charles Street, and I'm waiting for the 11 bus. A couple of people scattered around me, not too busy. It's Friday night, 11 o'clock. And I notice that the homeless guy that has been coming in and out of the restaurant all week long is there at the bus stop. He had followed me. And so I'm thinking, it's okay, clutching my purse because I had all my hot little cash from my paycheck in it. He's not going to say anything. He's not going to do anything. Don't worry about it. So I'm standing there, and he comes up behind me, and he says, I'm getting on that bus. I'm going to follow you home. You're in trouble. And I'm like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? I have no cell phone. It's 1985. I just have to go home. So I wait, and I wait, and the number 11 bus shows up, and I get on it. And like my mother had always taught me since I was a little kid, you sit right behind the bus driver. So I sat right behind the bus driver, clutching my purse. And I thought, the guy can't get on this bus. He has no money. He had money. He got on the bus. So there's maybe 10 of us on the bus. And I'm right behind the bus driver. And we start pulling up Charles Street. And I kind of whisper to the bus driver, excuse me, sir, but this guy, he's kind of following me, and I'm a little afraid. And, you know, by the time we get to my house, I think he's going to follow me home, and I'm really afraid. He's like, don't worry. So he starts to call. He's a really nice guy. He starts to call the dispatch. No one's answering, no one's answering. So we're going up. We go past Mount Vernon. More people are getting off. We go past Hopkins. More people are getting off. And so we're getting towards Loyola University, and it's the bus driver, me, and the guy. And at this point, he's threatening me. I'm going to kill you when you get home. I'm going to follow you when you get home. And I'm like, to the bus driver, can you help me? Can you help me? Can you help me? So we pull up right at the corner of Charles and Cold Spring. And the bus driver's had enough of this guy. So, and no one's answering his call. So we're just alone by ourselves. And he gets up, very nice big guy, and he says to the homeless guy, get off my bus. And they don't. And so before I know it, they are wrestling on the bus, physically wrestling on the bus. They are careening into chairs, ricocheting back and forth between the bus. Finally, the bus driver wrestles this guy into the doorway. The doors are open at this point, and he wrestles him into the doorway. And then, so if you can picture this, the homeless guy is now in the stairwell of the front door, holding onto the door like this, not getting off the bus. And the bus driver is standing this way, looking at the guy going, get off my bus. And before I know it, he rears his leg back and just belts the guy in the stomach. And the guy goes flying back into the lawn of Loyola University. And then he screams, we're out of here. And I thought, oh my God, am I supposed to drive the bus? Are you driving the bus? I don't know who's driving the bus. So he careens back in his chair. And now we're flying down Charles Street. The doors are still open. He's like, I'm out of here. I'm trying to call people. I'm like, that's okay. We're free. And then he finally says, where do you live? And I said, well, at the time, you know, the bus stop was around a block from my mother's house. He said, no, I'm going to drive you to your mother's house. And the bus isn't made. The streets aren't made for the bus to get onto my mother's street. But he did. And he just dropped me off in front of the house, and he let me go. And I was safe. So the next morning, my brother's awake, my sister's awake, my mother's awake, and we're all kind of talking, and I said, oh, I have a story for you. And I tell them the bus story, because we all never wanted to take the bus. We all wanted the car. I still wasn't going to get the car, but from that day on, my brother had to pick me up at the restaurant Fridays and Saturday nights. Thank you.